Future Commerce is brought to you by Link. Link makes your customers' post-purchase experience something they love through breakthrough innovation in artificial intelligence. Be sure to stick around to the middle of the show for a special offer. You can visit Link online today at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast.
Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
I'm Philip.
And we are going to be talking about NRF today. I was at NRF on the floor live, talking with some pretty cool companies, learning some stuff about the future of retail. And nice. Yeah, it was great. So we'll be talking about that. And then I think we've got some predictions later on in the episode.
Yeah, this is But 2017 edition of Future Commerce for our prediction show. So I'm excited about that.
I know. I feel a little bit like we're cheating because I feel like a lot of people have already kind of put out prediction stuff.
Oh, so. Well, I am unsullied in that I've not listened to a single prediction episode of anybody's podcast yet.
That's true. I haven't listened to any podcasts. Just saw a couple of little, I saw Romilly tweeting about some stuff.
And, well, you were also at NRF. You could probably make some educated guesses for 2017.
Oh, I could. And I'm really annoyed with what they're calling 2017.
But that's it. Okay, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
We'll get there. No, I get it. I get it.
We need you, the listener, to be engaged in our show. And so we want you to give us feedback about today's episode. In particular, if you have any predictions for 2017, the future of retail or the future of commerce in any way, shape, or form, we want you to send it in. So hit us up. You can hit us up on Twitter at Commerce Future, not Commerce Futures, which is really sad that actually we have a Twitter account that is so dangerously close to a Future of Commerce conference.
Events.
Yeah, that's in England in early 2017. But at Commerce Future, tweet us, or you can hit up the show title on futurecommerce.fm. Click on it, go all the way to the bottom of the page to the discuss comment box, and leave us some feedback. You can also make sure that you're subscribed because we want you to never miss an episode of Future Commerce. And you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or listen right from your Amazon Echo on TuneIn Radio with the phrase Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast.
It works. I use it.
It does. I do it all the time. I actually, I just... I'm getting deeper into the smart home outfitting of my house, which is a very slow going process, and I'm switching all of my Wemo devices, of which I have 9 or 10. I'm switching all of those off of the Wemo Wi-Fi system over to a SmartThings hub, Z-Wave compatible.
Oh, nice.
Stuff. So that's kind of happening in my house right now. So I'm excited about that.
That's awesome, man.
I have to guess that there probably wasn't a whole lot of home automation on display at the National Retail Federation Big Show at the Javits in January that you attended.
You know, a little bit.
Yeah, it's not CES, which basically butt up right against this show, actually.
It did. Yeah, it was interesting. Right before. I think CES was like crazy all about that Alexa in everything, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Funnily enough, I did not feel like NRF really focused on that very much.
Sure, yeah, yeah. I mean, because it has to be solutions for retailers, right? And it's what, you know, as much as we've been talking about voice commerce and conversational and AI, and as much as we've been talking about all these things, retailers are probably more focused on, you know, what are achievable goals for the right now and not for the things that I should be doing 5 years from now, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think, you know, omnichannel is still a buzzword. Although it's getting, they're kind of going away from that a little bit. I mean, obviously, I think it's more of a, I saw some what's beyond omnichannel flyers out there.
they took it to the superlative way too quickly. That's the problem. They went from multi-channel to omnichannel, and there should have been There should have been a comparative in there somewhere, but they didn't.
Probably.
They went right for it. You know, I went to NRF last year and for 3 years prior. I did not make it out to NRF with you for you know, for you actually being part of the IBM influencers team. So congratulations on that.
That's fine.
And I'm sure you'll hear plenty about the IBM influencer program over the next few episodes, and we can dive into that a little bit here. But the thing that strikes me that I remember distinctly about NRF is walking into the Javits, which is just the largest conference venue. That's just a, you know, a massive sprawling,
massive sprawling
expo hall. And you walk in and sort of, you're just kind of sensory overload. And then in front of me, as far as the eye could see, was just cash registers. And I realized, oh yeah, this is a retail show.
So that actually
has it changed.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, there's still definitely, you know, oh, let's get you some new printer tape rolls, right?
Yeah. And there are vendors at NRF. That's how I've traditionally thought about NRF.
Yeah, but that is definitely changing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Microsoft had like one of the premier booths at like right in the front. Like you walk right into the hall and you're like, boom, Microsoft. Which is just, I feel like, and I mean, I wasn't there last year, but that's got to be a bit of a shift.
I mean, that sounds like a massive shift.
Yeah. So I think this is the year that they're finally saying, oh my goodness, like digital, everything. Digital is not, it's not digital commerce. It's just commerce. You know, we've been saying that for a long time.
I was going to say a lot of us might've been saying for quite a while, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, several of us have been saying that for years. But I think it's really starting to show up in places like the biggest retail conference in the world.
You know, it's interesting. I think if you are a company right now who has focused, you know, solely on digital commerce for, you know, the last 10 years or eight years, and you've been focused solely on that, if your focus is not shifting to a full-scale, you know, digital enablement sort of play, then you will probably be left in the dust pretty soon. Because if you're listening to what the analysts are saying, you're listening to what people, what they're talking about, just, in fact, you don't even have to attend NRF. Just go read the titles of the talks from the... go read what the talk titles are from NRF, and basically everybody's talking about digital transformation. Everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think at this point you could say digital transformation sort of reaching its peak,
yeah.
The peak of the bell curve, if you will.
Yeah. Like, we're at peak DT right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which actually I think is interesting. We're very jaded, or maybe that's not the right term. We have a very myopic view of how retail works. I think from one perspective, we're both in digital commerce, but from another
just commerce, Philip.
Okay. Yeah. But I'm saying to distinguish the services business that you and I are both part of, but yes. I think to another degree, we're also in North America. And that, I think, also gives us a little bit more of a, if you're not in Asia and you're not in North America, I think the other markets, not just emerging markets, but other markets are probably not so heavily leveraged on online retail or digitally connected retail, digitally enabled retail.
I don't know about that, man.
Yeah, again, this is all... I don't have data to back it up, but from my travels and from my experience there, you know, if I go to Germany, or anywhere else in the EU, it's very much still it is chip and pin a little bit, but most everybody deals in cash. You see what I'm saying?
Sure. Like, yeah, I definitely get that. Yeah.
Right. So no doubt. I feel like the online marketplace, and the predilection for us to reach for our digital devices to shop for things that we're inspired by is very much a cultural thing here. And maybe that, I mean, I'm certainly spreading worldwide. We obviously are doing business worldwide with this stuff, but I think it's more prevalent here than elsewhere, and it gives us a very specific point of view, is the point that I'm trying to make. So anyway, you go to a show like this and you sort of have some preconceived notions. But so tell me a little bit about, you were at NRF for 3 days, right?
Yeah.
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So kind of give us a little bit of a blow by blow. How was Sunday? You know, what was
Sunday was definitely a little slower, I think. I mean, it was still crazy busy, but Monday and Tuesday, it was like you could hardly walk around. It was,
wow.
It was like, I think there were 36,000 people there. I think that's what they said.
I think you mean 1.5 million. It was,
what's that?
1.5 million people there easily. Period. Period. Sorry, that was a political joke. Carry on. Yes, 36,000 people.
Hey. Yeah.
36,000 people there on site.
Yeah. Yeah. 90 different countries represented, I think they said as well. So, or maybe over that. So in short, I think it was hopping. So Sunday was pretty cool. I somehow was able to sneak into the innovation lab before it was open to the press, which was kind of fun.
Are you
Epstein.
Allowed to talk about it? What you saw there?
Oh yeah, I mean it was the same. They were just setting up. It wasn't.
You've taken away the excitement of it. No, I'm saying tell us a little bit about some of the things you saw there and in the innovation lab. It was so they had an actual area that served as an innovation lab sort of showroom.
Yeah, they did. It was actually pretty awesome. There was I took a picture of myself out in front of the sign. It was an entire room dedicated to just cutting edge tech and tools. And I think, you know, there was some pretty cool stuff there. They had they had a little stage that they were doing basically like quick product pitches on throughout the day, and they did that all 3 days. And you know, there were podcasts going on, and there were people demoing at their booths. So there were a bunch of little booths kind of all around in a circle. And each solution was pretty groundbreaking, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe not all of them. It was actually, and this is not to be critical of the innovation lab, because I think it's cool they even had it, but it did feel a little bit underwhelming. Like it was probably, I don't know, 20 different booths at max. I mean, if you looked at the rest of the retail floor or of the exhibit
hundreds
hall,
and hundreds and hundreds,
hundreds, yeah. Two floors, like insane amounts of booths. And so I'm wondering if it like cost something extra to get up in the innovation lab. A few of the people that were up in the innovation lab also had booths on the main floor. And so I'm thinking there was some sort of additional cost or something like that to be up there. But that said, there were some really cool booths there. Sentient was there. I ran into our friend Jonathan Epstein, episode 14 that we had him on?
Yeah.
14?
It was in the early teens. It doesn't matter. Go back and look it up, though. It's a great episode.
It's a great episode. Actually, it's one of my favorite episodes, and I love what Sentient's doing. So that was, it was fun to run into him there, and they were demoing their Aware and their Ascend products. And then one of the things that I got really excited about, and that's because episode 8, and I tweeted about this as well, Thursday Finest, which was a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
It was
that.
The yeah. Come into store, get body scans, and then have... Then that will be on file, and you can have clothes 3D knit to your body specifications.
Wow.
And they had a 3D printer on the floor, or 3D knitter.
Okay.
On the floor.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't know. Are all knitters are technically 3D knitters, right? Like that's, yeah, sure. That's just
that's the wrong way to put it. On like it was a machine that made clothes. Okay. Yeah,
but it well, I guess technically most clothes are made by machine. No, I am personally trying to undercut this. This is basically the same sort of technology that a 3D printer employs, where it uses a filament of some kind or some sort of spool of material.
In this case, yarn.
Yeah. Oh, but it's actual yarn, like literal yarn.
Yeah, it's like it's thread. Or actually, I think it is a little bit thicker. I think they were doing like socks and scarves and sweaters and stuff. And
interesting.
It took about I think it was about 40 minutes to knit.
Yeah.
A pair of socks.
But it's a technology by Intel or being shown off.
So I'm not sure who powered this machine, but actually, yeah, in Agile here in the Intel episode that we have, where I went to the Intel booth and they were basically showing off like all the cutting edge solutions that they power. So there were like 18 or 19 different stations. I didn't even get to them all in the show. I had like one of their payments executives sort of walked me around the whole booth, and then I got a pass off to another executive. So that's coming up on in a future episode. It was quite exciting. It was packed with people. Hopefully the audio quality is good enough to listen to.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, no, so they actually had a much bigger print, or like they had a much bigger knitting machine in their booth.
Wow.
It was bigger than Thursday Finest. And so, yeah, that was pretty cool to see that in action, because that's something that, and we've been talking about for a long time as the future. And, you know, I think it is upon us, kind of like we said in episode 8, like within 5 years, we could actually see, a lot of clothing, you know, the way we think about clothing could change. So
interesting. And is it fast?
It's pretty fast. Yeah. Like I said, it's like, I think it was like 40 minutes to knit, I think like a socks or a scarf or something like that. Which is pretty good. Like it's like, okay, go hit my, you know, one touch. Hey, I want a scarf in this color. Boom. Help, you know, and then you can pick it up within 40 minutes.
Yeah. And that's so one of the things that's really great about the you know, again, not to harp on this too much because there's so much more to talk about, but in the 3D print arena, they're able to sort of topographically build up layers of, you know, plastic or a polymer of some kind, where you can sort of print things in their final form, moving parts and all, without any real assembly required, or print otherwise impossible objects. Is this sort of in that space that they call it a printer more than they just call it a, you know, knitting machine?
Yeah, I mean, I think knitting machine's probably more appropriate.
Okay.
At least that's how I felt about it. I don't think it's, you know, doing impossible things. Like, you're going to look at the socks and be like, oh, sweet, a cool pair of socks. Like, I don't think that it's like, whoa, that's a piece of clothing that I've never seen before. It's not like, I don't know. There's not, I didn't feel like there was anything extra special about the clothing.
I see.
But I didn't get that indeed, you know, in depth with them. And so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is something like about the clothing that's beyond what we're used to.
Cool. So moving on from that, what else? So I know that we have a number of interviews coming up. You don't have to spoil the interviews. But I know that you, got a chance to see some people and see some other tech up close. What else can you tell us about?
Yeah, one of the other things that I absolutely loved, and I actually didn't get an interview with them at the show because I actually wanted to follow up and do a full episode with them, is Augment. And they do augmented reality for e-commerce, where And this part, I'm still a little bit fuzzy on. I got the demo from them, and I was absolutely blown away. And then I was moving on, but they in browser, and I can't wait to get them on the show because I want to know how they do this. In browser, you can click a button underneath the product image, and in browser, you can actually see, without having to have an app, you can actually use their tool and see what the product will look like in physical space through your phone. And so, I was looking at, I think it was a dryer or washing machine, and you would hold out your phone and move your phone around, and the object, the washing machine, would actually interact with physical space. And so you could spin it, you could set it down on the ground, you could push it into different spaces.
That's crazy.
I know, right? Super cool.
And they're called Augment.
Augment, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, well, can't wait to get them on the show. That's really interesting. I'm hearing actually a lot coming out of NRF, and maybe it's not necessarily just coming out of NRF, but sort of on the heels of CES too, that there are a lot of plays in the augmented reality space that seem to be
legit.
Legit, actually shaping up to be really interesting
and useful. I think that's the that's the thing about this. It's it's okay, it's fun. I have the Space Needle app where I have a little tile, and then I hold my phone up and I can see the Space Needle, and it's shooting off fireworks around the Space Needle. I can knock it over with my hand. That's fun, but this is an application where it's oh my gosh, this is really useful. I can put a couch down in my living room, see what it's going to look like, and buy it online without ever having to go to a furniture store or warehouse, which is
wow.
That's mind blowing.
Wow. So there's a couple, again, not coming out of NRF specifically, but we found on digitalmarketingmagazine.co.uk it was written a couple weeks ago, on the 13th of January, a post by Saima Ali Bahi. And it's kind of an interesting rundown of the current state of VR and AR by major brands. And so they list five brands that are actually experimenting with virtual or augmented reality: Harrods, Burberry, which it's always those high end retailers or brands. Harrods and Burberry, eBay and Meijer, which Meijer is in the Australian department store, not Myers, the American low-end grocery chain, they're doing a VR department store sort of a thing. But the one that stuck out to me was Converse, being able to basically map a virtual shoe through Augment. They're using Augment's technology to do AR and map a virtual shoe onto the user's foot, which basically makes a virtual dressing room wherever you are.
There were a few shoe technologies that were there. I talked with Souls is putting out one, and now I'm blanking on the name of the actual tech that they were demoing in the lab. It was called Size Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was another interesting sort of footwear.
How does that work?
Another foot scanning, sort of body data type solution that for footwear specifically. Pretty exciting stuff. And there were a couple of others that were similar.
When it scans, is it footwear. Using a camera?
I think so. Yes. I think you actually take pictures of your foot.
Yeah. I can't think of anything worse. As a person with a genuine foot phobia, one of the worst things I ever saw was somebody demonstrating that they could use an iPad and the touch sort of, they've created an app with the multi-touch capabilities of the iPad that if you put your foot right on the screen of the iPad, that it would, it could tell everything about your foot. And I'm thinking to myself, I swear if I ever use an iPad that unbeknownst to me had feet all over it, I mean, that would be the end of my world. But anyway,
that's pretty gross, man. I'm not going to lie. Like if there was,
the
if
future
it was
of
like...
retail is not in feet. I will tell you that right now. No, what's great is, the forward thinking nature of a bunch of these brands, having implemented this. And what I really find interesting is that how they're matching it up with other technologies that previously have been sort of considered dead, either beacons, Bluetooth beacons, or RFID, which have both...
Oh, RFID is not dead. It is not dead.
RFID was heralded at one time as the sort of be-all, end-all.
The future of retail.
Well, yeah, and it really was. I mean, when you talk about, you know, never have shrinkage again. I mean, the kinds of, like, bombastic statements that we've heard, like,
yeah,
you know, never worry about shrinkage, reducing loss, reducing, you know, man hours and inventory hours and that sort of, but none of that stuff has actually ever
been. Yeah, a lot of those solutions were there, too. One thing that did catch my eye was, a company that was, I think, including some sort of a chip in their clothes I think it was a chip of some sort. And it actually, like, the physical object had digital properties associated with it. So you're wearing that shirt, you're going around the city, it unlocks different experiences for you.
Yeah.
Or other digital goods that, you know, that are of value to the customer of some way. Kind of fun idea. I like it. I mean, it's not something that you even necessarily need a chip for. Like, you could do that with just a, you know, hey, wear our clothes and you get extra stuff around the city. But certainly the chip makes it seamless. So that was pretty cool. Another cool thing that I saw, and I think we're going to, I talked to them about doing an interview as well. OnStar, GM, and IBM all collaborated on putting Watson into a car that provided contextual ads via voice and screen as you're driving.
Link is the best way to get your customers coming back to buy again. Link's Cortex AI platform creates rich relationships with every customer at every touch point on every platform. From Magento to Shopify, Hybris and Demandware, over 300 logistic and reverse logistic carriers around the world are integrated with Link. Link brings your brand to where customers are on Facebook Messenger, Alexa, SMS, and more. Let Link add the power of artificial intelligence to your business. For a limited time, Future Commerce listeners can claim an exclusive trial offer for 30 days free of Link Cortex. Sign up today and visit them online at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast.
I saw something like that, or saw something about that, and I wanted to know more. One of the things I think is a big sort of a misconception, and I was also guilty of the misconception, which is that Watson is sort of, you know, kind of being thrown around everywhere. Everything's being branded Watson. But you actually sort of reframed that for me as there's a bunch of criteria from IBM about what actually qualifies a product as Watson or not. And so my question would be, what do you know what that criteria are?
I don't.
And okay, no. So you don't. And
I think
and,
it's a little bit, it might be a little bit of a secret.
Yeah. And I'm curious how those criteria fit into, you know, a car navigation system, quasi self-driving or something less than self-driving, you know, system or platform.
Yeah, it was like voice activated. So that's sure. Where I think, yeah, Watson kind of came into play there. And then also providing the contextual ads based on X number of factors, things like that. But yeah, no, I think it was, you know, I don't have an answer to your question about the contextual, like the Watson list, if you will. Hmm. We should come up with a name for that, some sort of a code word for that.
Yeah, we could. Also, IBM has sponsored us for this NRF series, so I want to make sure that we're answering the questions correctly. That's why I asked it to you. My guess is we're gonna see voice in every single car in the next 3 to 5 years, right?
At CES they released, I think, was Volkswagen is putting Alexa into all their cars.
Wow. Yeah. And well, I mean, that's all of CES 2017 was basically Alexa everywhere. And that's sort of what we're seeing, Alexa in everything from devices to, you know, software, apps, Alexa enabled apps. I had a Honda Odyssey from 2010 that, had, or maybe even before, I think I had an Acura RDX from 2007 that had voice capabilities. You press a button and I could speak to it. And the thing that was always missing is it trained you how to use it. It didn't understand context. Like, it had zero understanding of natural language processing or context. Yep. But voice has been in cars for a long time. It's not a brand new thing. Yeah.
Not novel at all. No, it's been around since 2000 and late 2000s, and
I think we're missing is wake words. But the thing I'm sort of driving at, pardon the pun, is do we need this? Because our phones do this, and I feel the same way about this as I do about navigation in cars. Navigation's a high end feature in a car, and do I want to pay for the touring package when I never, ever, ever use the nav in my van? I never use it.
So it's a good question. Do you have your phone set to lock so that you can't use a wake word, or do you have it?
No, I have a wake word, and I have a trusted voice setting.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and in particular, you can set those things up to be more permissive when connected to certain Bluetooth networks. So when I'm automatically in my car and I'm driving, I'm already on the Bluetooth in my car. It's going to be permissive about the wake word and the the lock screen behavior.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, it's a good question, especially with Alexa. I actually kind of question why we're putting Alexa in our cars,
I would want Alexa in my car the same way I want Alexa in every room of my house, in that sometimes I'm in my car and I need contextually, like, I need things that are relevant to me, to how Alexa has come to know me, right? I want Amazon Music in my car. I want, Audible podcasts in my car. I want to be able to, you know, have it read Kindle books to me in my car. There's 100 reasons why I can think why this is good.
Yeah, but why wouldn't we? I mean, I would say that Google makes more sense, even. Like, there's more context that Google has for me on the go than Alexa has.
Yeah, but I feel like more of my life is, more of my consumer life is housed at Amazon. Maybe that's just me, but I'm not using Google Play for music, and I'm not using...
Fair.
You know,
that's fair.
I'm not using Google's books, whatever the heck their digital books are.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're probably using Spotify for music, right?
I don't use Spotify for music. I use Amazon Music, but that's only that's only because I'm cheap. Spotify. Also, as a former musician, I actually have a big ethical dilemma with a service like Spotify, but that's beside the point.
Fair enough.
Yeah. My take is that, I guess from a preference point of view, as soon as Alexa comes to the phone, this is such a moot point to even debate. Cause I don't know how many people are going to go buy the Volkswagen because it has Alexa, when Alexa will be on your phone by the end of the year. So that's my 2017 prediction anyway.
Hey, prediction.
You know, Alexa's on everything else. It's bound to be baked into, you know, Android or have an opportunity for Android, you know, wake word capability pretty soon. So I think that's something we'll see.
I think it's a good prediction because and it's interesting, you know. I wonder, you know, how many different digital assistants we'll have. You can actually get Cortana on an iPhone, right? And so I'm not saying that people that are on an iPhone are going to want to use Cortana necessarily, although it sounds like Cortana's maybe doing even better than Siri is in terms of ability. But But it will be interesting to see what other, like, types of personal assistants pop up. Is everything going to be wrapped up in one? Probably not. Like, is it going to be Alexa and, you know, Siri, Alexa and Google? Probably. Yeah. And are there going to be other ones that pop up as well? I mean, we've talked about this before, but are, you know, certain brands might even have their own version, and then there'll be an opportunity for you to interact probably via some interface in Google. So, like, hey, Google, let me talk to, you know, let me talk to Nordstrom's or Starbucks.
Right. And I think that's, I think we're getting, the point that I was distilling it down to, which is it's all of this is already on our phones.
Yes.
We don't need this to be built into a car, although it's interesting. If it could do more car-y things, then sign me up, but I don't
think
it will.
So the one thing that I think that was interesting is that the contextual shopping, contextual reminders and you know, ads and things that actually maybe Alexa can't provide right now. I'm driving past this and Watson knows that I've been looking for something like this online. And actually, this gets into another idea that I talked about in some of the upcoming episodes, but the idea of personal inventory, I think that's something that could be real coming up here pretty quickly. I don't know about 2017, so this might not be a prediction for this year, but the idea is that very soon we're going to, our digital assistants or some sort of apps will have pretty much a stock of everything that we have, and we'll actually be able to get more relevant ads based off of that stock. So, like, let's say that you're running low on milk or whatever, you know, it's going to be, hey, stop here and get milk on your way home, and it's going to save you a bunch of time. Oh, by the way, do you want to pay for it now? It's waiting for you at the door.
Yeah. Well, so there's a couple things that I think, so that's a great vision of the future. I think the next level down would be, and this is now going out quite a ways, certainly not 2017, but I've become very accustomed to having an email come in through Gmail that says, hey, let's meet next Tuesday. And next Tuesday is sort of already underlined, and there's kind of already a pre-baked calendar event ready to just pop in, right? And the Google Assistant just came to Hangouts, within the last couple weeks, certainly since the last time we talked. And if you do anything location-wise, if you're just talking about location, like I happen to ask Jackie if she wants to get, you know, Starbucks or Chipotle or something, it will actually sort of highlight that word and ask you if you want to search. It does all the Google Assistant sort of things that you get in Allo. So it's interesting. You know, we're already doing that in other forms of communication. I think voice is the next one. And potentially what I would love to see is, you know, we get done with a phone call and the assistant pops up and says, hey, would you like to set a reminder to pick up milk since you just talked about picking up milk?
That would be amazing. Yeah. Or like, hey, these are the meetings you talked about. Like,
these were the action items that you just pulled out of that really boring phone call.
Right.
Those are all things that I think will be, I have to believe people are working on those things, but you know, there is a creepy factor there. Depends on, I think at this point, it's all possible, right? I mean, this is certainly possible. So let's delve into the predictions a little bit. I don't know if you want to vamp on this more, or if you want to go back to NRF. I'm happy to do either.
I mean, one more note. This is a little bit old now, but Gartner, let's just riff on the voice thing just a little bit longer, because sure. Gartner this past year refreshed a study on voice, and they think that by 2018, 30% of our interactions with technology will be through conversations with machines. 30%. That seems actually pretty realistic. I actually do a lot of my interaction with my phone through voice at this point.
So in 1 year's time, 30% of all aggregate interactions in search or in other things.
Everything. So not just voice, but conversations. So it could be chat or voice.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
That sounds a little better, but I'm trying to think of all of the interactions that you have all day long. 30% of those, that's one in every three, would be voice-based. Maybe, we're doing, like I said, we're going a lot into home automation right now, and certainly always looking to increase the amount of voice control that we have, and we become so familiar. I find myself now, out and about, and I ask Alexa to do things, and that's, then I realize how patently ridiculous that is. but one day it won't be, and,
no.
And who will be laughing now?
Right.
Yeah.
Alexa will be laughing.
That's true. When she cashes that check.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, NRF. What else? Let's see.
One other thing. Sorry. One last thing, since we've been harping on Alexa for some time. One of these digital voice assistants, they have to come up with an integration to Tile, if it doesn't already exist, so that I can just ask it where my bloody keys are, instead of me having to open up the app, and the app has updates, and it wants to upgrade firmware, and then, it tells me about the 12 batteries that are all dying. Like, just let me just ask where my keys are. That's all I want.
Yeah. Alexa, where's my child?
That's great. All right, carry on.
Yes. It's just really quickly. So I want to go back to something you said like near the beginning of the show about NRF. And that is that it is very overwhelming. Like, that has not changed from year to year.
Yeah.
I stepped in, and I've been to IRC and several others, and this is my first time at NRF, the big show, and it is insane. And I'm not gonna lie, and I love the conference. Actually, there are a lot of things that I really loved about it, but as a merchant, I would be feeling a little lost, and if I walked that hall, it would be kind of terrifying, because it would be like, everyone is trying to sell me something. I think it'd be very difficult to discern what you should pay attention to, because there's some pretty cool stuff that's hawked there, if you will. And I would be, I guess what I'm driving at is, merchants, when you go to NRF, have a plan, do some research, talk to your technology partner or internal technology team. Be ready, because you're going to get a lot of pitches in a lot amount of time, and you're going to get told that a lot of things are coming, or that you need to do all these things, because 2017 is the year of the customer. And, just be ready. Be ready for that. If you're going to have a much better experience at the show if you do.
The year of the customer.
Yeah. I heard that thrown around a few times.
Do we know what it was in years past?
I don't even know now. I think last year, Messina dubbed it Year of Conversational Commerce.
Yeah.
I don't know what NRF dubbed it. I do have to bring up one idea, though, and I think this is an interesting one, because I'll call out Kurt Theobald here on this one, because he's like, I hate the word omnichannel, just like, you know, almost everyone. Sure. He's like, I want to call it convergence, like brick and mortar. Oh, by the way, Kurt Theobald, CEO of Classy Llama, used to work there, and he's a great forward thinker. He's a great guy to talk with about this kind of stuff. So he's like, yeah, I want to use the word convergence for the mashing of brick and mortar and digital instead of omnichannel. And, you know, I thought that's a pretty good idea, because omnichannel is a terrible word. But actually, what I want to do is actually broaden that word's definition and actually take it to wherever technology is like meeting to form new solutions that are beneficial. And I would define it as happening whenever two technologies come together in such a way that a merchant can recognize an ROI from it. And I was so funny, because I was thinking about this and talked to a few people about it beforehand. And I stood up kind of near the front for the keynote by the chairman of NRF.
You got me.
Chair or president, something like that. Anyway,
sure.
I was watching his speech, but I could also look back and see his teleprompter, because I was standing up.
Sure.
And one of the main slides that he had on there was convergence in tech as a header. Right. He didn't actually say the word convergence, but I think it's on people's mind, that word. And I think it's a good one. And actually, I think it's a really good one for 2017, and now I'm getting into predictions. But I think this is the year where we're going to see technologies we've been talking about for a long time come together in a meaningful way to provide a better experience for customers, or create some sort of better conversion rate or ROI, or, you know, whatever it is. This is the year where we actually see that happen in a lot of different ways, like one-off ways, or I wouldn't necessarily say that we're going to see like one solution dominate the market, but we're going to see a lot of these like one-off, hey, I took this technology, put it together with this technology, and created this type of solution that's awesome, things happening this year. And I'm going to call that convergence.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we will see some element of convergence in 2017. I really hope that it's because of adoption by the customer, the all important, all powerful customer, and not because of
year of the customer.
Yeah, not because of consolidation of the market or you know, deglobalization. You know, I think that there are incredibly negative forces that could force some of that convergence, because people have no choice but to really master other channels, because their old channels are dying, right?
Interesting point. Yeah.
If you have to look back, I'm sure that there was probably an NRF in 2004 or something. I don't know this. You know, this is hyperbole, but I'm sure there was an NRF or IRCE where they said this is the year of the affiliate. And the affiliate channel is all but dead in most areas of commerce now. So my guess is that, you know, channels come and go. I think you have to understand, you know, the fundamentals of how your customers work, and what your business provides to your customers, and that should transcend where you sell, right?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, I think, you know who does a really good job with that is Neiman Marcus. And I actually got to catch up with Scott. I'm sure we'll insert that clip in here at this point in the show. Yeah. But I feel like that is exactly how Scott Emmons thinks about his strategy for implementing new solutions. It's, you know, channel is important, but, you know, it's about meeting the customer where they are. So
yeah, that actually might be a really great place for us to sort of start wrapping it up here, because I think we do need to meet customers where they are. That's actually a good portion of what this show is about, is meeting customers where they are. And we talk a lot about voice platforms. We talk a lot about, you know, the emergence of AI, the emergence of VR and AR, all these interesting things. And we want to be where our customers are. That's the key, right? So anyway.
No, that's a good point. Cause like, actually, I'll get into this in the interview with Amber Armstrong from IBM, but they put out a study on Gen Z right before the show in collaboration with NRF. And Gen Z, I think they've already got $44 billion in purchasing power, and they are young.
Wow.
I know, right? The interesting thing about that study, although I think maybe this interpretation is a little bit in dispute, I talked to a couple people who were like, yeah, I think the questions that they asked were maybe, it could be interpreted either way, but I think this is actually quite true, though. Actually, you know, based on my experience with Gen Z, this is true, and that is they are not going to abandon in-store, but they do expect in-store to interact with them differently. They do expect brands to engage with them in new and exciting and you know, meaningful ways that makes going into the store worth their time.
I mean, you cannot discount the chief of all of the reasons to go in store, and that's the instant gratification, right? Prime Now is successful because we can get what we want from Amazon right now. And I think that in-store will never go away. Brick and mortar won't ever go away, if only because we need that right now-ness to be itched from time to time.
For sure. And the other thing that I think you called it, actually maybe 2017 is the year of the customer, or that is meeting the customer where they're at.
Yeah, I think that we'll only see that in reality when customers make decisions about which platforms are meaningful to them. We can't tell them what platform. We can't tell the public en masse what platforms to gravitate toward.
Right? Well, I think it's pretty clear. Voice is one of those. I mean,
well, but there's going to be there's going to be a winner in the voice space. You know, and yeah, one of them one of them has an 18-month market lead, so they have a big head start. They'd have to do something pretty monumental to squander it at this point. And they have a massive app store. I mean, there's like something like forget the last count, 3,000 or 4,000 skills in the Alexa skills store.
That's so like triple when we started, dude.
I know, it's growing even faster now. I mean, they're giving away developer hoodies every month for all you have to do is publish some nonsense, you know, skill on the store, and you get some, you know. I mean, they're like basically daring people. They're like paying people with branded merchandise just to you know, take a shot on Alexa. It's interesting. I think, you know, when we continue to see. If you know, if the figures from holiday 2016, and the estimates come to be true, and we'll see it soon, I'm sure. You know, probably around Amazon's Q4 earnings call. when those numbers prove true, and we know how many Alexa users are here. And engage, right? How many use it on a daily basis? I think that will prove to major brands that that's the next platform to be developing for, because apps are dead. You know, as Brian Romilly said a couple episodes ago, apps on phones are dead. People have 5 apps now. You have Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you know, and you know, maybe a host of other, you know, cameras or social apps, but you typically, you know, phones have become very social devices, but not necessarily ones outside of gaming that are doing anything worthwhile in the app space. For all the potential that's there, it's not engaging in commerce outside of the, you know, the marketplaces. So we'll see it. We'll see it. I think it's a big platform, but you know, Alexa has to win it de facto. Interesting.
Sorry. And
I went on a little rant there. I'm stoked that you agree with me to some degree.
Do I ever?
What's your take on so I feel like NRF had a bit of a rebirth. I've heard NRF sort of people have sort of audibly rolled their eyes in the past that they have to go to that show, but this one sounds like it's really turned around, and if anything, people are more excited about NRF now than ever, and probably a little less excited about, you know, some of the other shows that are getting a little bit long in the teeth, like shop.org.
Yeah, shop.org, honestly, this is gonna sound a little sad, so I probably can't pass judgment on it. Like, the companies that I've worked for have opted not to attend shop.org.
Yeah.
And based on experiences that they've had with it. And it's kind of being replaced by ShopTalk and
yeah,
some others. ShopTalk is definitely exciting. Like, I want to go to ShopTalk. I don't really want to go to shop.org.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that.
Yeah, but NRF, I think, is definitely making a play. It's the biggest. It makes the most sense for it to kind of take this turn. And so I'm glad that they are. I'm glad that Microsoft is showing up. One of the coolest things that I saw at the show was actually at the SAP Hybris booth. I'm going on a tangent right now, but it speaks to where NRF is at. They were demoing an integration with Blipr. Blipr is a company I've
called. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was way cool. Actually, this is insane. Blipr's app has facial recognition for every single person on Wikipedia.
What?
At least that's what they told me in the booth. I need to go download the app and like try this out. But you take your app, you know, and you hold your camera up to someone's face, and if it's in Wikipedia, they will bring it up and information about them. So
wow. And so, but that's, I mean, that's got to be, you know, ostensibly millions of people. It has to be.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah. No, it's crazy. And there were a bunch of other cool stuff like that. Oh, man, there's actually a lot of cool stuff that I didn't even talk about. I also got to visit Body Lab's office, which was way cool, too.
Okay. Yeah. We have to dedicate a whole episode just to Body Labs. To this day, I think our body data episode is one of our most popular.
It is, yeah.
Definitely,
episode 8, baby.
Yeah, definitely something we need to get back into, and would love to have somebody from Body Labs on the show to sort of...
Oh, I already got it hooked up. This is happening.
I love it. I love it. Well, take us home. I'll let you do the honors. Take us out.
Oh, shoot. Well, thanks so much for listening to us today. We hope you really enjoyed the show. And if you did really enjoy it, you should go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, leave us some feedback in the discuss comment box below on our website, or reach out to us on Twitter, LinkedIn, anywhere else that you can find us. definitely subscribe to the podcast. You can listen to us, you can subscribe on iTunes or wherever else that you listen, or you can just listen right now from your Amazon Echo with the phrase Alexa play Future Commerce Podcast. So don't miss out, because there's some amazing content ahead with IBM and their influencers and futurist team, and some potentially crazy guests coming up, like just crazy, crazy cool stuff that we're talking to some people about. So definitely subscribe. With that, keep looking towards the future. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.